Welcome to episode 57 of The Summoned, a podcast dedicated to the Judgment Eternal Champions miniatures game. I'm one of your hosts, David Coakley, a.k.a. Fabius Bile on the Discord, and I'm here with our other lovely co-host, David Wonky, Wonky Kong, on the Discord. And how's your evening going, Wonky?
Oh, not too bad. Just, getting used to life with the baby.
Right. I'm sure that's been a pretty decent change over the last, month.
Yeah, it definitely has been. So, it's been new. We're figuring it out, but, it's going.
Right. Now, are you and the wife still not working yet? So you're still being able to...
We're both off, but we go back to work soon. So, that'll be a whole new situation.
That'll be the whole adjustment period right there.
Yeah, I mean, it still has been.
Oh, yeah, so, I know. Obviously, having a kid is a big adjustment, but then you'll have that next period of adjustment as well, so.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, we all wish you the best with that, because it is, massively life-changing, and definitely real life ends up taking precedence, so.
Yeah.
But, obviously, we've still got our episodes to do, and we're going to dig right into it. And, as always, the first segment is... Hobby Corner. All right, Wonky. Working on anything new, or has obviously real life taken its toll?
It's mostly that, but since I don't really paint, I don't really have too much. I got some stuff to build, but I've not been there. So
gotcha.
I'm just got to build some stuff, but I got to get to it soon. So
makes sense. I know, like, myself, I haven't even built my Yorgoth, Loribella, or sticks that I got from, Warfare Weekend myself, so I've still got those to build. I stopped making progress on my Zyvera and Brock that I was working on, because I have a Age of Sigmar team tournament coming up here in the next month that I have to finish getting the rest of the 1,000 points of Seraphon I've been working on. Done, and so that's kind of taken some precedence. But
which one are Seraphim, the old like lizard men or something?
Yeah.
I always forget what those guys
are. Yeah, they're the old lizard men.
Okay.
So I'm working on them, and I'm doing a full Starborn style army. So like, I've used a bunch of the like blue and kind of bluer metallics and stuff for a lot of the metallic on them. Did a bunch of jade type stonework for them. So, really trying to focus on pushing my color schemes to a little bit something different.
Yeah. Yeah, the Lizardmen have always had pretty sweet models, like, even way, way back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did, and their newest release, they just made the Saurus Warriors and stuff look badass, and I even had to do some conversions to make some Saurus Guard for myself, so that was kind of fun. Okay. So that's kind of what's been on my hobby desk, is painting 1,000 points of them real fast and getting that figured out. So that's where I'm at with the hobby side of things.
Yep.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just saying that, the Seraphim are sweet. So you're doing a team tournament? Was that what you were saying you were doing?
Yeah, so we're doing a team, it's a team narrative event up in Chicago, so it's literally going to be... done at the first weekend of February. Okay. So it's kind of fun because like the first weekend of February I get to go up to Chicago, see some people, and then a month and a half later I'll be back.
Yeah, I'm back for Adepticon.
Because obviously, yeah, exactly. I'm going to Adepticon, so I'm gonna for sure be back for that. So
makes sense.
Yeah. Nice. So really trying to just push through that right now, and then of course it's gotta plug on my like last 2 to 3 models for Adepticon to make sure I have everything painted.
Yep, that's we'll mention again in the news when we get to the Adepticon stuff. But yeah, gotta have it all painted.
Yep. So, well, I think that's it for my hobby corner. Like I said, I've just been working on pushing 1,000 points of that out plus some terrain, and that's kind of where I'm at. So
nice.
So with that, I think let's jump into probably the biggest informative section of tonight. Which is going to be Judgment News. All right, let's talk about the thing that's coming up here very quickly, which is LVO, right?
Yep, coming up real quick. Coming up again, January 18th through the 21st, LVO, so Las Vegas Open, so it's in Las Vegas. Real quick rundown, they got the single judgment ticket for the event, for all the events, which are a threes veto style format on Friday, a fives veto style format on Saturday, and then Sunday is casual and some, I think they might do some free-for-all type events.
Nice.
On Sunday. I don't know how many seats are left for that one, because the way that they sell their tickets doesn't show what the level, the cap is. And the tournament packet has been released. Right. That's got everything that's legal, and all the maps that are in it. The big thing would be if you've been playing online, any of those that don't have released models will not be legal for that tournament. So your Zafin, Haxa, Nefanine, Svetlana, Sharn.
Yeah, that sounds right.
I think that's about right. So, you know, just be aware of that. And I think they are going to use LVO for invitational points, I thought I saw.
Yeah, that's what I think they said.
Yeah, I think the idea was they're trying to get more events that will do that. So they're, that could have some points tied to it for the rankings, which I guess is a really good caveat. Well, I guess we'll talk through the other cons and then we'll talk about the tournament season stuff, because we got information on that.
Right.
So, Fabius, what's the next convention that's coming up?
So the next con after LVO is Captain Con, and that is actually happening February 2nd through the 4th, which is the same weekend I'm going to be in Chicago, which is kind of hilarious. And that is happening in Warwick, Rhode Island. It looks like they have a threes event on the setup for Captain Con. And that will be on Friday, the 2nd of February. And I'm assuming with that threes event, it will probably either be a blind pick or a veto.
Yeah, I don't remember what theirs was set for, to be honest.
As I say, my guess would be veto, because that's what pretty much all the tournaments tend to
Tournaments pretty much have been at this point. So I'd have to imagine that that's what it is.
So, I do know, because I remember when I looked that one up the last time, it was, it did say, new player friendly.
Yeah.
So, and that's something to definitely note about all the tournaments. Even if you're going and you realize, you know, you have to realize these are tournaments that people are going to start playing for invitational points. But that shouldn't be any discouraging factor to go jump in and play some games. Yeah, you may not win any of them. But talk to the guys who are you're playing against, and they're always, like, everybody I've ever talked to has always been more than happy to analyze a game, you know, afterwards and talk about what you could have done possibly in some different scenarios and just ways to help, right?
Yeah.
So, all right, so that's Captain Con. So then, Wonky, what's the next big thing after that?
So the next one big after that is Adepticon. So this will normally actually be the kickoff of the tournament season, which we'll talk about a little bit coming up.
Yep.
And yeah, so Adepticon is the is supposed to be the kickoff. It's probably the biggest con, I think, that's got judgment. I mean, technically, I think Gen Con has some judgment, but not they didn't have events last year. So Adepticon is the biggest one that has it. So Adepticon is March 20th through the 24th in Schaumburg, Illinois, which is a suburb of Chicago. You can't just say Chicago, or, you know, those Illinois folks get angry when you say that, because it's not technically Chicago.
Right.
So just outside Chicago. I'll be there running the events. So we've got a threes event on Friday. We're starting at, I believe, 9 a.m. Start time for that one. We have 24 seats open for that one, and then fives will be Saturday at 8 a.m. start time with 32 seats. We will give accurate numbers, but badges haven't gone on sale yet. They do this weekend, so probably by the time people hear this, they will have already been opened up.
I will say, because the con is coming up and that's coming out, I'm probably going to push this out faster.
Okay, well, so it may or may not. So hopefully, if you hear this before the 7th, I believe it's 7th.
It is the 7th, and noon, it, as at noon.
Noon. Seats will open up. Yeah, I'm sure we'll post on the Discord if I'm aware of it.
Start checking at noon. It may be 1.
Yeah. Yep, so that'll be for Adepticon stuff.
Yep.
We don't have anything planned for Sunday, but I think I've got to be most of the day Sunday, so I might try and run some King of the Hill or some team stuff.
That could be fun.
A bit more casual for those that are sticking around on Sunday. The big thing to point out is that painting is required.
Yep.
We will not have a waiver. You must have painted models. It is at my discretion. So please put paint on it. Please,
make an effort.
An effort. No, just random three striping of color. But, it doesn't have to be, you didn't shade, you didn't highlight, you didn't whatever. Like, I'm not going to be that.
No, it's like, it's the basic idea that not to poke specifically towards one company or another, right? But it's similar to like what Games Workshop says with their tournaments and stuff. It's get them battle ready, which is basically get your base coats and throw a texture down, right? And in this case for Judgment, most of your models are already pre-textured because they have a texture on the base already that Creature Caster has done. So it's literally just get your base coats down, guys. Get your colors down, right? That doesn't take long. Your brother did a model in, 20 minutes with some of the speed paints or contrast paints?
Yeah, so the speed paint speed paint tool, mm-hmm. as they call it that, you can paint models pretty quick to a pretty reasonable amount. And, it's not the most perfect thing, but it's enough to be painted, and that's... For me, that's more what I'm looking for. If I can tell you put some effort into painting it, I wouldn't even say there's would be a harsh color number because some models just don't require a lot of colors. But if you make an honest attempt at it, that's good. And you can always check with me beforehand. You can reach me at the Discord or whatever. But it is a thing we're going to have to enforce.
Yep.
Because it is a con-wide rule. So yep. I cannot.
There's nothing that we can do about it.
Yep. And I would prefer to not make the con angry, so we follow the con's rules.
Correct.
So registration is January 7th. I believe it's at noon central.
I believe so as well, it could be 1. So that's I'd tell people just start checking at noon. Yeah.
I've also saw a post on Facebook. If for those that don't use Facebook, maybe we can post to Discord, but there is a separate link from the Adepticon website that you use to register. And they did make a statement that you should not use their website to go to the link, that you should just go directly to the link. I guess due to traffic and what their website can handle versus what, the badge thing can handle.
Interesting.
So there was I got to find it. But I remember skimming a post they did today. I think it was today or last night. And it's our website can only handle, X amount of traffic. But the whatever they use to do the event badge purchasing is on a technically a different website on a different server that has the bandwidth to handle more. So if you go through their website, you might get bottlenecked on their website before you get to the badge website that's not down. So that was a post I saw on Facebook today.
Okay.
I think they've got a news section on their website. I'm assuming is also on there. So that would be a thing to be very aware of when it comes to stuff like that. Because, we have a reasonable chance to be able to fill our events.
Yeah.
So let's skip the line. So there is some new stuff. They've got a news thing, and everything they post on Facebook looks like it comes onto the news feed on the website. So I'd highly recommend going to adepticon.org and go to their news section. You can also have a badge shipped this year, which is also can save you time on the line. I don't see the one with the specific link, though. But anyways, I would take a look at that if you're planning on registering for Adepticon. It would be good to make sure you get the events you want.
Yeah.
I actually found the post right here. So, January 7th at noon, so 12 p.m. Central.
Okay.
We recommend that people review the preview schedule events, continue to be added and updated since they were posted. Once the registration is live, you can use one of the two following links, and it gives two links. We would advise not visiting adeptcon.org to find the registration link. That server is separate from the registration system and is not designed to handle the inevitable flood of traffic on opening day. So that was posted, it looks like, 2 days ago. So I would go to adeptcon.org, go to their Facebook news, and then there are two links that they give that go directly to the registration system. So I'll post that in the Discord as well, coming up here, just so that people are aware, because I would like people that want to play Judgment be able to get to it, because, yeah, we only have, you know, X number of seats. So 24 seats for threes, and I think we had like 16-ish last year.
Yeah.
And we had 22 people for fives, and we only have 32 seats for that. So we could fill both events.
Very easily.
That is a thing that could definitely occur. So I think that kind of covers Adepticon. I mean, that one's coming up faster than you expect. But Fabius, there was another big thing that kind of came out since we last recorded. So what's going on with the tournament seasons?
Well, the tournament seasons, and I guess in which regard are you referring to here?
So they released some of the ranking stuff that we should probably go through. And then they've got some of the pack stuff. So,
this is stuff that I actually hadn't had a chance to even look through yet myself.
Oh, geez.
Well,
okay.
With my job being the way it has been over the last, you know, month, I haven't had a chance to look at anything that's been going up. So that's actually good to know. Okay, so they've updated some of the champions rankings. So that's good to know. So it looks like ranking points are going to reset after each tournament season, which, of course, you will accumulate those points as you play in ranked events. The ranking is the total. Let's see. Point total is the sum of their season's three.
Yeah, so there's
okay,
three,
so three so best three events. Point so, results. Gotcha. So yeah, basically so no it takes your many, three best events. Got it.
Yeah, so no matter how many events you play in, it's three events.
Okay, cool.
So you can play in 50 events. Only top three events you play matter.
Okay.
So this kind of gives... So some of the other ones... Some other ones that do these invitationals, I don't know if do some of those kind of restrictions. But, yeah, this one's only three events, which I think is really, really good.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, if you can't make it to a whole lot of events, it definitely makes it a bit more of a problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because if you only make it to, like, you know, one or two cons a year...
Hi.
Yeah. Yep. So, and the points are based on size of event.
Okay.
So the bigger the event you go to, the more points that are available, and the more points you get. They've got a calculation on there. We're not going to go through it, but
yeah, no.
Essentially, like the max number of seats in event is calculated currently at 32. So essentially, if you win a 32-player event, you get 100 points. And then there's a scale where it scales down. But, yeah, so a 32-player would be 100 points. If you win a 16-player event, it's 60 points. So just kind of a rough idea of, like, okay, the bigger event you go to, the more points you earn based on how you place.
Right. Which, I mean, that makes sense because, you know, well, I mean... It just makes sense that they're going to, the bigger the event, the more points that are spread across everybody, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So that totally makes sense. Okay, so I'm seeing that you've obviously, that's how they're doing the formula for the basic rankings. Then you have the actual Masters Invitational, which is the tournament at LVO, right?
Correct. So this tournament season will be at LVO 2025.
Mm-hmm.
And Fabius, who gets those spots?
So it looks like you get the top 10 players in the rankings. So that's where points are important. And then beyond that, because it looks like it's the best 16 players is what it is. So you got the top 10 in the rankings. And then you have the winners and runner-ups from Adepticon, Warfare Weekend, and the Las Vegas Open Last Chance Qualifier. I think that's actually quite beautiful that it's, if you go to Adepticon, you go to Warfare Weekend, you go to Las Vegas Open, and get into that last chance qualifier and win it, or you're in the second place. I love the fact that they're like, here's a spot. I think that is absolutely freaking fantastic.
Yeah, that's pretty common from some of the other invitationals. I mean, I'm mostly aware like how War Machine runs theirs, and that's how they tend to do it.
Right.
I think they do 32, but obviously their game's a lot more mature.
Right.
Than Judgment. Yes, that's good. I like that it's also the runner-up.
Yes.
So if you get to the finals table, it'll qualify.
Yeah.
Which is helpful, I think. So.
Yeah, I mean, I like that because, like, for example, with Warfare Weekend this last time, right? The final table for the fives was like myself and Robbie.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a little bit of pressure, in my opinion, off of both of them, both the players, to go, cool, hey, we're still playing for first, but we've qualified.
Yeah, I think that's really good.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see that. I mean, that's good. That's a smart way to do it. And obviously, you know, next tournament season, if we get a couple more conventions,
yeah,
you know, logged in, then we can definitely, I'm sure this will change, right?
I think that's good. It gives room for growth, but it also keeps it conservative in a way to be like, hey, look, this is our first tournament season. We want to, we want to make sure we're going to have people for this, right?
Yep.
I do think it's important to note, though, and because this is a big thing, while proxies and such can be used, as they've said, in like at the tournament organizers' discretion and such in the like ranked events that are, you know, outside of the Masters Invitational, they actually have a specific note that on the Masters Invitational, proxies will not be eligible for that.
Yeah.
So I think that's an important thing to note. So it's like, if you've got this cool proxy, that's fine. You can use it anywhere else. But if you're coming to the Invitational because you have a ranking, you better have that model painted and ready to go of the original.
Yeah, I don't know if painting was required. I didn't necessarily see that.
I would assume it is.
Okay, it might be for the Invitational, but I'm not 100% on that.
Either way, I would just tell people, make sure you have the model ready to go for table. Yeah. You know, and to me, that means you better have at least those few colors on it, right?
Yeah.
So, and then it looks like, I think they're going to award some prizes. That's kind of cool. I like that.
Yeah, so, yeah, prizes are going to be for the Masters Invitational winner, the number one ranked player at the end of a season. So even if you, like, whoever gets the most points, mm-hmm. right, throughout the turn, the con stuff. And then highest ranked player per god as well. So
I think
even
that's
if,
pretty cool.
Yeah, I like that. I like anything that does that, you know, like faction-based stuff like that's always kind of cool, like the best in faction.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty good. Yeah, so I think that covers a bunch of it. There are some generic rules for running the ranked tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of the quick bullet points is you got to use chess clocks. It's got to be veto or immunity, so both are good. You have to use maps from the official pool. You must use long shanks to track the event. The event must be a minimum of 8 players in 3 rounds. And you need to pre-register the event with Jeff Galea, and he's got his email address there.
Yep.
There is also a link to like the generic version of like the tournament pack. It's got some good information there. It's got the eligible models for tournaments. They'll have to keep that updated. It's got, you know, just kind of the basic stuff. It's mm-hmm. pretty similar to what, you know, the Adepticon. Basically, every tournament pack has been essentially this.
Yeah, so this is just the generic version.
It's just the generic version, and it's been cleaned up a little bit. It's got some rough round times you can use, too, for running convention events.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, honestly, it probably isn't overly useful because you're just going to do it based off whatever times you're doing anyways.
Right.
But it does try and give you at least an idea when you're running an event how many rounds it would be, you know, depending on what time you start. So there's some of that. Yeah. So it gives you kind of the outline of that. There are rules for proxies. Again, it is proxy stuff should be validated with people, with Jeff Galea as well. It mentions or your TO. But there are some base stuff there. Essentially, it's got to be 32 mil scale that fits within the map hex. Same race as the hero you're proxying. Same weapon and shield configuration as the model you're proxying. And then for official ranked events, it should be approved by, again, emailing Jeff. And as a note, all version 1 models are not considered proxies. They are legitimate judgment events. and so they can be used for everything just fine if you have V1 models for those. And then again, proxies are not eligible for Masters. So that's a bit of the tournament stuff. They do have a rough calendar outline. So the rough outline is it's 10 months long. So it starts so the January convention of Las Vegas Open is the last chance qualifier and the actual invitational. February 1st, the tournament season would begin. So any tournaments that are after that that have been pre-approved can then be set for the tournament season. Your rankings reset and the new season's announced. They do mention that they could have story arcs and some special rules per season. I don't think we're getting any of that season one. I think it's just going to be pretty vanilla for that. June 1st, they will do a mid-season patch. November 1st then is the end of season tournaments. So essentially Warfare Weekend happens, and that is the conclusion of tournament season. And then they'll do a post-season patch that goes into effect immediately, and I believe that also will be for the Invitational, will be on that new rules patch. So you'll have a month and a half, 2 months to get practice in with the new rules, and then you'll have the Invitational the following year.
Yep.
So that's pretty much the tournament season stuff at a high level. The new maps are out on Hall of Eternal Champions. There are 8 maps for 5v5 that do include some of the new terrain. There are maps, however, that do not require new terrain. So if you don't have new terrain yet for that, there are maps that don't require it. So for those that are playing in person for that. So Fabius, any thoughts on the tournament season stuff?
I'm actually really excited to see how it works. I've been waiting for this to come for a while. Obviously, I'm a little sad that I didn't see it get posted and pay attention to it as much. But, of course, it gets posted while my job has been at its busiest. But I do like it. I've had a chance to play a couple practice games on some of the new maps. I really like them. I think they're I think the maps have been chosen really well so far. I also haven't played on I haven't played on all of them, so I can't say that for all of them, but the ones I have played on, I've really enjoyed. I've had good, solid games with them, and I'm looking forward to seeing what the tournament season brings.
Yeah, I had one map with one of the four Monster Pit maps that got a little bit, ridiculous, but my dice cooled off, too, so it's hard to be a bit more objective when stuff like that happens, because, it just became a mess, and then my dice kind of were like, nope, we're not going to help, and I was like, all right, was it bad strategy, bad map, or bad dice?
Right.
It's probably a bit of bad dice and bad strategy, but I'm up in the air on that map still. But yeah, I think I just need to play it a little bit more. And it actually was a map that kind of favored me slightly because I was playing Gruul and had a bunch of rough and forest in the middle of the map.
Oh, okay.
Which is kind of fun, but the four monster pits just kind of became...
Gotcha.
Game a bit much, which there's quite a few four monster pit maps.
I was going to say,
I'm curious,
honestly,
to see.
I'm looking through these, and I'll say this. I think this is, if we're going to call this season anything, even though it's just season one, I think this is the season of the monster.
Yeah, I mean, 50% of the maps have four monster pits, which is a lot. So yep. we'll see how that translates in once we start getting in the tournaments.
Yep.
But yeah, there are 50% of the maps have four monster pits. So definitely gets a little bit intriguing when you have that. So I'm curious to see how that works throughout the season and what people
think about them.
What people think about them as we get deeper in to the season. So all right. That covers our very lengthy news section today.
Yeah. Well, Fabius, we said it was probably the biggest, so it makes sense.
And definitely some good information there, because the next section is going to be a little bit more fun.
Yeah. So normally we do a dojo, or we do some sort of talking about, building a warband or something else. Tonight's episode, Wonky and I are actually going to talk about New Year's wish list. I mean, after all, we're entering the season of 2024. We're actually getting a tournament season. So we're going to talk about some of the things that, you know, we would actually like to see in the new year. And as the year progresses, what we would love to see Creature Caster put out or things like that. So let's just kick it off straight up, Wonky, with give me something new that you want from Judgment this year.
All right. So this has been a thing I've wanted for a while, and I think I brought it up in the Discord. But I would really love to see a dwarven engineer hero.
Get out.
That can drop turrets.
Get out.
Yeah, yeah. So this is so I have been a bit of an MMO fan for a long time, and I used to play Warhammer Age of Reckoning.
Yep.
Which was a fantastic game that sadly died because it got swallowed up by the World of Warcraft behemoth.
Right.
But I loved the game. It was super fun. And I played, was it just an engineer? I'm trying to remember, but it was like the dwarven guy who was all about like bombs and stuff. And you had one of the paths was you could drop a turret that could do different stuff.
Okay.
And the bomb part we kind of have carried with Lori Bella, which I love. I love Lori Bella is by far one of my favorite heroes in the game. Mm-hmm. I play her quite a bit. She makes a lot of my warbands. I'm a little surprised I actually didn't run her in this league right now, but I decided to go with Barney instead for a couple of reasons, which we'll probably talk about in a future podcast when we talk about league stuff. But
yeah.
Dwarven Engineer, with the idea of being able to place a turret, I kind of feel this would work. Could work a way similar to like Ankara's Bell, where it would have some amount of cost to put out, you know, on the table.
Yeah.
Some sort of little model or something, and then you know could either spend an action to move it or just move it like Ankara does, or some way to move it around, but not make it like as easy to move as the bell probably.
Right.
Yeah, and then have it be able to, you know, take a couple of shots and maybe have like the level up path where you could pick like upgrades to the turret. So sure. Kind of like the demons where you can pick multiple options. You could pick like turret upgrades. I don't know.
What I'm hearing though, I mean, like to me, that sounds like one of the easiest things to do with it would be like make it similar to say Zarin or, you know, Svetlana or Gendris, who can spend a fate, spend an action, summon this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then to me, the easiest thing sounds like you give the engineer themselves level up like options to give the turret a new weapon, right? Or a new attack or
something like that.
And then you give it so many actions.
Correct, probably like one or two or something, depending on, and like the thought would be, or maybe you do like two upgrade paths where like one upgrade path kind of makes it more of this kind of a turret, the other upgrade path makes it the other kind of turret or something. I don't know.
Yeah,
it was a cool thought I had that like it was an archetype from Age of Reckoning I really enjoyed that I think would be kind of cool to bring along to this. At least I think it was Age of Reckoning. I'm trying to remember. It's been so long since I played that game, but that kind of dwarf engineer that could like drop the turret, or even Torbjorn from like Overwatch, that kind of a dwarf with the turret is just by far, it's a thing I've kind of wanted for a while.
Yeah, sure.
That I would love to be able to see, something. I mean, and obviously, who knows what we're getting for heroes,
right?
This year, but it's one I've been wanting for a while. Probably not going to happen this year, but still going to be on my wish list we get it.
That makes sense. That totally makes sense.
All right, Fabius, what's something you are looking forward to this year, either on your wish list or just in general when it comes to Judgment?
I mean, I'll be honest with you, man. My biggest want, as my title in the Discord or my name in the Discord says, Lord of the Undead, I really want my undead girl, Ramona. I absolutely 100% want her back into the pool of heroes I can select and play with because I've really enjoyed playing the game with her. But I think as much as I like her and I want her back, she's not my number one thing that I want back from the old stuff, actually.
Okay.
I want Baylan Sarna back, man.
Oh yeah, Pale and Sarna.
I want my nut punching goblin. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. He's I feel very mixed on Pale and Sarna because I like the concept, but as I've said time and time again, I'm not the biggest fan of the unit rules.
Right.
And that, and maybe because it's the only unit we have.
Right.
It makes it feel worse, I guess.
It's weird because as you try to punch one or do damage to one, you can feed it to the other.
Yeah.
It's almost like, I guess the best way I can think of is a lot of the times it's like a mini version of Lug Drug.
But it's not that. Like, the damage splitting is fine. It's always the, like, what happens on respawning,
Right, it's the extra questions.
It led to so many rules questions about, like, how different stuff behaves. And Judgment overall for a game is pretty streamlined on the rules. That, like, and most stuff you can read the rules and, like, it's...
Yeah.
Okay, but to me it feels obvious, but, like... Bale and Sarna and the unit rules just didn't feel very intuitive when they came out.
No, that's fair. I don't think they changed.
I mean, I actually haven't read through them in V2. I know they've probably stayed very similar. I think the big thing is the distance for the damage splitting.
Yeah.
And they were trying to make the rules generic enough so that, you know, if they released more units in the future. But I also have kind of enjoyed that a lot of stuff is just individual heroes versus like multi-model units. Because it's not like an army game, right? Like,
right.
It's a like hero, like it's a hero battler essentially.
Yeah.
So the unit stuff just always felt clunky, but they do have some cool rules, like the goblin stuff, the nut punching. That was a groin buster. Groin buster. That's what it was. So like they have cool rules and abilities on their cards. It's just more the unit stuff that's always been like,
yeah.
But Bale and Sarna would be fun. They do have a lot of tricks. Mm-hmm. They definitely can do some hilarious things.
Yep.
And Lori Bell loves to blow them up, so they're perfect. You know,
there you go. See, I'm trying to help you be able to play Lori Bella more.
She just gets banned more.
Well, right, sure. No, I mean, I want to see them come back, but you are right. I think don't get me wrong. I love the models. I would love to see them be able to be played again. But I think part of the reason why we haven't yet is actually, I honestly think partially because the unit rules themselves, I think they want to do some more work on those. And they want to try and make those as streamlined and straightforward as possible, right?
Yeah, I will counterpoint that I think it's more a sculpting thing. Okay. Because we haven't seen Creature Caster has not created goblins.
Yes, they
previously.
Have.
Well, okay, well, I'm getting there. Previously with the, like, when the, you know, partnership started.
Oh,
they had not created goblins before. And so, like, when it came to making heroes, they only have so much bandwidth,
sure. You know,
as a company when they were doing the big hero launch for the Kickstarter. So, I mean, because we also haven't seen Jaeger. Yeah. Right, another goblin.
That's true.
One that I would like to see again. He's got some very fun rules, and I quite enjoy Jaeger a lot. But we haven't seen either of those. Now, yes, as you were getting to, they did release. Was it one of their D&D My Mini Factor?
Yeah, they on Mini their STLs they released goblins for the tribes.
Correct. So. And there was a joke I think someone made. It might have been Josh. Like, oh, this was a perfect.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. Because we didn't see. We didn't see Grail. But we never actually saw a Grail model.
Yeah, we never saw Grail for V1.
We got rules for him at the end and into the open beta. So I think it's more from that perspective than unit rules. Because I don't think the unit rules really changed from V1 to V2 outside of the distance where they can split damage.
Yeah, I don't think they did either.
I mean, they might have done some, like, wording cleanup, but I don't think they, like, fundamentally changed.
Probably not.
The rules. So, but, yeah, I think Bale and Sarna and Ramona are definitely a higher probability than my Dwarven Engineer. So.
Probably. Well,
probably got that to look forward to.
Well, and that's the other thing, right, is if we're talking – those are things that I want to see return, right?
Yeah.
If we're talking about, like, brand new heroes – that, you know, then there's a couple of things that I wouldn't mind, a couple of new type of heroes that I wouldn't mind seeing, but like being like, yeah, it's a dwarven engineer or it's this, you know, I haven't given a ton of thought to it because realistically, it's just not been something on my mind. Yeah. But I have thought about, like, we have Rakir as the poison assassin. We have Istariel as kind of the, per se,
fire assassin
and such like that. I'd actually would love to see a frost-style assassin.
I mean, we kind of have one.
If you, who are you thinking like, about for that?
Zim? I mean, Zim
kind of. Not really. He's a control mage.
But here's the thing. Like, I always felt like frost magic in games was more about control than, like, again, I'll kind of lean on well, I guess even like League of Legends, right? Like, what the heck's her name? Lissandra, I think it is. She's like an ice queen or something, and like her frost stuff is more about like mobility and control versus like flat damage.
Sure, it's one of those things that I would like to see a frost assassin slash bruiser.
Like
even a bruiser, right? What I'm talking about is I would like to see something where frost can be used in a way that's not just, oh, cool, I'm going to frost you, put this out and
whatever. Yeah, actually, what would be kind of cool, and it's a mechanic I've seen in, I know World of Warcraft has it, and both are frost specs. So in World of Warcraft, you have Frost Death Knight and a Frost Mage. And it's like this mechanic of like breaking.
Okay.
So like you would apply frost and then maybe like expend the frost to do something instead of leaving the condition.
Yeah. See,
like that would be kind of cool.
That's what I'm thinking about. Right. Cause like Rakir doesn't get rid of the condition when he toxins.
Yeah.
You
just have to have it. Yeah.
And Fazeel, the same thing for pestilence. Mm-hmm. You just have to have it. I would actually really love to see some sort of like frost bruiser or assassin or something that cool. Combos with this person gets frost, now this person can step in and like shatter that frost. And
yeah, that would be kind of cool. And like a maybe almost like a blood pact mechanic, like from Kane, right? So Kane, where you can interrupt and like, oh, if the model is frosted, you can, you know, once per activation or whatever, like, you know, when you make an attack, you can get rid of the frost to like add some true damage to the attack or something.
Because that's
how the Death Knight thing works in WoW, is like you build up a debuff as you do damage that stacks, that makes your, well, in WoW it makes your frost damage do more damage, but then if you use an ability, like it expends and does extra damage per stack. So something might be cool like that, where it's like, okay, you hit them, it does an interrupt, and you take the frost off of them instead of leaving it applied. So it's like, do I want the control of frost?
Right.
Or do I want to get rid of it for the damage? I actually think that would be kind of cool.
Yeah.
Versus having to spend fates to just like, oh, you have the thing, now just do damage. Or like, okay, I don't have to spend fates, but it's, do I get rid of the condition for the damage, or do I want to leave the condition on for, you know, the the purposes of it?
Correct. And that's kind of where I was thinking with it, is something where I say Frost Assassin, right? But that's just the first thing that pops in my head, is something that you can do something with that.
With frost, yeah.
To do extra damage or...
Yeah, something that combos with it.
Yeah.
Because, like, Zim just applies frost. He doesn't do anything with frost, not, like, the Rakir and Asari. Yeah, I think that would be kind of cool.
Yeah. So that's kind of where I was like, ooh, this would be a cool idea, I think. So...
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, we both talked a little bit about some new hero ideas... obviously, and we've talked about a couple models that we'd like to see return. So now my next question is there any new type of terrain you'd like to see?
So I've got one thing I would like to see return.
Okay.
And that is the elemental shrines.
Yes.
I think they need to get looked at from a power perspective.
I would agree with that.
Because they were... like crazy strong in V1, and only one of them had a drawback. So I would like to see the elemental shrines return. For those that don't know, in V1 we had a couple of maps that had, there were four, the, you know, earth, water, fire, and air, that when you controlled them they did different things. So right. For instance, the earth shrine, if you controlled it, it's actually how it used to spawn Terra before Terra became a monster. Fire Shrine, you could buy items.
Mm-hmm.
Like as if you did an item buy, but if you got pushed into the shrine, you took fire damage.
Yep.
The Water Shrine had like a magical shot and would heal. An Air Shrine did a magical shot and could move a model. And the magical shots were really good.
Mm-hmm.
They were like magic eights, and one of them could stun and the other one could knock down, I think. Which was wild to get like a random knockdown in the middle of your communion phase.
Snowball! Bang! Ah!
Yeah, so I would like to see shrines like that come back, but I would like to see them mm-hmm. be a bit more measured.
Makes sense.
In what they did. And kind of along with that, I would really like to see a way to buy items not at your effigy.
Yeah, that wouldn't be a bad idea.
I think Dota has something where there's like a item shop in the middle of the map that you could go to and buy, you know, items instead of being at your home base or whatever they call it in Dota or League.
Mm-hmm.
So like that would be kind of a cool idea. Now you could pair it kind of like what the Fire Shrine was, where you could buy items, but it might be cool to make it not like contestable.
Right.
Like just something you'd add to be base to base to. And then you could buy items as if it was your effigy. That mm-hmm. might be kind of cool. Because I think items are one of the coolest mechanics of this game that other games don't have. At least other minis games I've played.
Right.
Where you can dynamically buy items in the game, right? There's like 40K, you can like purchase different guns and war gear and whatnot. But that's all before you bring it, like before you get to the table.
Right.
Where in Judgment, you can dynamically buy items based on what you need.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, and I think that's one of the coolest mechanics outside of the monsters. I think monsters are probably the best mechanic.
Oh yeah.
Because I think they're fun. It adds like a PvE element to the game mm-hmm. that can be good. Unless you have five monster pits. I think someone just made a five monster pit map that I'm kind of curious to play on to see how that works out. Because that's a lot of things you got to deal with even in fives. But
oh yeah.
But yeah, I think some sort of like way to buy items not from your effigy would be kind of cool, and outside of monster kills,
because
right. then they'll be kind of cool for some of the range characters,
mm-hmm.
right? Where you don't have to start next to the effigy if you got the monster kill with them, but you don't get the bounty. Like I don't know, something like that I think would be kind of cool for a terrain. Do you, Fabius, you got any kind of interesting terrain ideas you would like to see?
Well, I know we talked about it like once before on a podcast, and I mentioned it. I actually wouldn't mind seeing some, like, destructible terrain.
Okay. Yep, I do remember discussing this before.
Mm-hmm. Something like where there's, you know, you've got some of those really tall, like, height 4 walls or whatever. So it truly blocks line of sight. Or forests, even, where mm-hmm. there's a section of them that if you actually are willing to spend somebody moving up there and actioning, they can actually take out a chunk of the forest and clear a path. And
okay.
I think that'd just be a cool mechanic to
Do you think that it should reward you for doing it? Because my concern
mm-hmm.
is, right, you have a very specific action economy.
Right.
That if you're spending attacks doing that and not attacking your opponent's stuff, right? Like, if you right. spend the time doing that,
mm-hmm.
and then it also might kind of benefit your opponent.
Sure.
Then you're basically just, like, giving away actions. So that would be, like, it sounds cool. I do like it.
Right.
Because I think it's kind of interesting to, like, have something like that. But I feel like you got to be a little careful because, yeah, I feel like the...
I mean, it's realistically something that you could even do it as, like, a Thorgar free action, right? Where Thorgar enraged assaults for free.
Mm-hmm.
It could just be something that is, if you move up to this...
Oh, so position-wise. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, you're giving up your action to position, but then you still can free action. Hey, knock down the wall...
Or something. Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, that I think I would like more.
Yeah.
Because, your Thorgar comes up to it, knocks the wall down, and then, you know, walks up to it and then charges behind it versus not being able to. I think I could get behind that a bit.
Yeah. I mean, or even, you know, you have that that setup where, say, they're hiding behind the wall because they know you can't charge them there or anything, right? And you can use that Thorgar to knock down a section of that wall, and then all of a sudden you're like, hey, I'm going to go ahead and my Thorgar's level 2. I'm going to pull you.
Yeah.
Now I'm pulling you into this section of the wall. You have to figure out how to get out of it now.
Well, if it's a one hex wide wall, you can't pull.
Well, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. No. I guess depending on what it is. But yeah, I would. I think that could be kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's. Yeah. I don't hate that.
Like I said, it's something that it would be cool to see. I know through the terrain itself, through going into the rules, it could add a bunch of hassle to the game.
Yeah.
And so that's always a concern I have anytime I'm coming up with an idea of like, oh, this would be kind of cool to do. It's like, how much extra hassle does this add to the game? And I just think it would be a fun, cool thing to do. Maybe not even so much in like competitive play, but maybe for like multiplayer,
narrative or
right?
something. Because I know it's been talked about a bit, like narrative.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't hate that. The other thing I've kind of been thinking about is some sort of terrain that's like between like stealth and being in the open, right? So like you have a cloud that's like, okay, you can't target what's in it.
Right.
If you're outside of it or you're out in the open. And I guess you have cover, but cover tends to have to be like walls and pillars and like things you can't move through.
Yep.
So something maybe in between that's like, if I'm in it, you suffer some sort of a negative, but like it doesn't block line of sight. It doesn't like give movement penalty.
Right.
Like that seemed something else kind of thinking about. Like you could be like, oh, here's a couple of hexes of, I mean, you can't really use smoke because we already have smoke. Mm-hmm. Haze, I guess. I don't know. Like
swamp gas.
Haze or like, I don't know, like a wind vortex or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
That like it makes it more difficult to shoot, and it could also be more difficult to shoot out of.
Yeah.
So like if you're in it and you're shooting out of it, you have the same penalty. So you have these kind of different spots where it's not,
what,
you know, it's not a forest that blocks line of sight. It's not stealth where you can't target or shoot at the model.
What if it was like a triangle three hex vortex?
Yeah, that was like something like that was kind of my thought of like
it's a whirlwind.
Yeah, something like that where, you know, it doesn't really do much besides, like, the penalty. Mm-hmm. And you can make it where, like, there's a melee penalty, I guess, too. Where, like, hey, if I'm in it and you attack me, it's a minus one. But also, mm-hmm. again, if I'm attacking while in it, I'm also, just something like that.
That could be cool.
So, like, that was kind of my thought, was something like that where you could fill some of the more open gaps on the maps.
Mm-hmm.
With this, and it's not as punishing as stealth. That means you can't shoot people, and it's not as punishing as line of sight blocking, where you can kind of get into standoffs, but there is benefit for hiding in it, but there's also like a negative, right? So like if I park my Astariel or Zaffin in there, like he also gets the minus, like shooting out of the terrain, but it's protecting him if he's in it. So I don't know, just something like that has kind of been a thing I've been thinking about a little bit, because we don't have it's. It feels like some of the terrain is, it's you can't shoot me, or you can, but I guess you have cover. But there's not huge amounts of cover that feel super relevant in a lot of the maps. Like the walls are usually a little bit further back, so you can't like brick around them, and stuff like that. And then this wouldn't be some that like required Pathfinder to maybe go in or out of or something, and you could see through it, and I don't know. That was something I was kind of thinking about for terrain too.
I like it. That's a pretty solid one as a whole. So, well, okay. So now we've talked a little bit about terrain. We've talked about new heroes, other things. Let's keep it rolling with new formats. Do you have any new formats you'd like to see?
I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say new formats, I'd like to see a bit more focus on the not tournament style event like format for playing, which can be kind of hard. This was a problem a bit for my War Machine days, is that War Machine was billed as a very like competitive game because it had a pretty strong rule set, and that's just like every event you went to for a long time had it. And I know it's changed a bit, and they did on occasion do narrative events and some of that. But I think Judgment is also trending that way of, you know, we're doing threes, we're doing fives, we're building into a tournament season with an invitational. So we're leaning at the competitive, which I think is good. Like, there's definitely benefits to it.
Well, right. The only thing I was going to put in here is think about, you know, and this is not a jab at anybody, but think about the two creators. They have very heavily influenced War Machine, Warhammer.
Yeah. And, well, right? I mean, Warhammer is not a competitive game. Like, let's, I mean, it's gotten better. But like,
sure, Wonky. Well, you go take on the Warhammer community on that one. I'm going to step out of this one.
No, what I'm saying is, when you have a game that has soft scores that determine your placing, it's hard to take a game like that, like, as a high-level competitive game. Or, you know, like, the stuff where the guy, I don't know, I always love the picture where the guy, like, deployed the stuff so the guy couldn't bring his army on because he was playing some cheesy-ass stuff where, like, literally his army didn't deploy and he could come in from any table edge.
Yeah, but that hasn't happened for years.
True, but, and like I said, I'm fairly confident it's a lot better now, but considering how, like, Warhammer was for a very long time, like, I don't look at Warhammer 40K as, like, a super highly competitive game. I'm sure people do, but with, like, soft scores and some of the other stuff, I think if I was trying to, like, pick a game to play competitive, like, if I was going to go, like, super ham on a game to go, like, really hyper-competitive with, I don't think it would be 40K.
Right, but that's why I'm saying is look at the background of the guys who created Judgment.
Yeah, no,
they have that, like, very competitive background to them.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that it's trending that way.
No, and that's fine, and I think the rules are written in a way, you know, like, hexes was a huge part to be able to make it more competitive.
Very much.
Because you can't fudge a tape measure.
You can't fudge a hex.
Correct. And, like, I remember the Hand of God moment at, so War Machine does, like, the World Team Championship,
mm-hmm.
which basically teams of five from every country get together, usually in Europe, and they play each other, and it's, like, a huge event. Like, you got to get selected for your country's team and all this stuff. And one of the guys got caught on stream leaning over the table and bumping a model forward. And if you know anything about War Machine, people tend to play it ultra precise.
Yeah.
Like, every little quarter of an inch in that game can matter, because a very strong, like, in that game, if you fail a charge, like, it's very, very brutal. And because of, like, the scale of the game, the number of models and the table size, like, so, like, a quarter an inch to a half inch, when you thought you were out of that and all of a sudden you're suddenly in charge range of something,
makes a big difference. Yeah, I get that.
Massive difference. So you can't really get that with Judgment. So I think one of the bigger reasons they moved to Hex. I mean, also speeds the game up a lot. Holy crap.
It does. Yes, it does.
Not having to have measuring sticks and measuring widgets and all that crap just makes the game go so much faster.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, I think we've been trending very much so in a hyper, okay, not maybe not a hyper competitive, but a very competitive mindset for the game, which I think overall is fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the game can lend itself to some more fun, more casual,
yes,
and actually just more multiplayer or team formats, because, like, playing Judgment is fun. Playing Judgment on a team with your friends is even more fun.
I mean, dude, that game that we played at Warfare, where it was you and your brother versus me and, you know, Gamer Dad. Dude, I know that game took forever, but we were all having so much fun with it.
Game was a blast.
And it was so bonkers, you know, watching Krognar effigy recall over to your other effigy and mine to, you know, the other effigy. It was just so freaking cool.
Yeah, it was fun. So I would like to see, like, with regards to that, some hardening of those rule sets.
Sure.
And I know there was some discussion about doing that. I think it came up a couple of times. And I think I gave a bunch of feedback for the 2v2.
Mm-hmm.
To, I think, Jeff.
Because
we had a little bit of discussion about it after Warfare Week. Because I don't know how often people played those. And I get it. Like, right, when you play war games, you have X amount of time to play. And this is directly the War Machine problem. Because this is 100% how my meta was for War Machine. Is that when you play any of these games, you have X amount of time to play a game. If you plan to go to tournaments, right, your X amount of time to play is like, well, I could do that thing, or if I want to do better at the tournament, I need to practice tournament stuff. right? Tournament format, tournament lists. So then what it becomes is, okay, you show up to your weekly game night, and like most of the people are playing the tournament, like a tournament list, because that's what they're trying to get practice with. And War Machine's definitely a game that warrants a lot of effort and practice to get better. Not that other games don't, but it definitely, the way that the game could be tactical, where like one misstep could be, you get curb stomped. It definitely could feel that way. And so, you know, if you only have limited time and you still want to go to tournaments and do well, like you're going to practice tournament stuff.
Yep.
And, you know, we're obviously also not a huge game at the moment with Judgment. Like it's not massive. It's growing, which is good. But I would like to see some really good cleanup of the multiplayer.
Yeah.
The free for all is fun too. Like I've heard of some people doing a 1v1v1. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, we have three people. Okay, let's do the free for all format. And I actually have not played that one to have any idea if it's any good. But the team format, and again, we're saying this, and then we're like, well, we also haven't done it, so.
Well, that's the thing, right? Is we're not saying that it needs to be hardened on their end. It's, hey, this is a challenge even for us. We need to get.
Yeah, and I might
some of this stuff.
Yeah, I might have to follow up, but I might try and run some of that at Adepticon, because one of my favorite events I played in a while back was actually like this really hilarious, like it was like a King of the Hill style event, where you would bring, so in War Machine you had war casters or and essentially like they're your general, like they're your king. If they ever died, you lost the game when you played the actual game.
Oh yes.
But the format was you would bring three of those, like your generals, and it was a four-person table.
Oh God!
And the last person standing moved on. It was King of the Hill, so like you would play against the three other people. Whoever had a model left at the end was like the King of the Hill, and then you paired, you know, the King of the all the King of the Hills against each other, and then like that was the next round.
Okay.
So something like that could be kind of fun.
Okay.
Where it's like you put four people at a table and they each bring like two models, and it's a King of the Hill style. Like,
so it's still a competitive format style, but it's more fun.
Like, I mean, it can be competitive, but it's like that turns it a bit more beer and pretzels. Like, okay, what's a wacky combination I can do with two models to do stuff? Like, okay, we'll just say like, oh, I'll bring Sharn and Zafin. Like, I'll bring Zafin to try and snipe people. Sharn's just going to tow Zafin around. And I'm just going to, like, okay, we'll just do that and have some fun with it.
I am not surprised that is the combo you picked.
Yeah, I know.
It's okay. I'd pick Styx and Fazeal.
Yeah, so just, like, something like that could be kind of fun. And then, like, maybe you don't respawn. But then that kind of, like, makes people want to turtle a little bit. So, like, it would have to be tested. But I think the game can do some multiplayer or team formats that could be fun. And they have some rules for it. So, and again, I am also guilty of not playing these more, but I think trying to do those on Vasa would be miserable.
Well, it's not even that it would be miserable. I don't think I'll be honest with you. One of the biggest things is how hard is it for you to get one game a week, Wonky?
Right now,
like one game a week, realistically, when you're doing everything you normally do in your everyday life.
Yeah. So like with Vasa, it's not necessarily the worst, assuming I can find someone at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Because I haven't gone back to doing my weekly Judgment Night, which is my plan soon-ish.
Right.
So, yeah.
But even with Vasa, I mean, sometimes it's still hard.
Correct, right? It's, you know, especially with a kid. Like, again, right now I'm not working, so, like, it's...
Right.
When I get back to work in a couple of weeks, it definitely will get a lot more difficult.
Right, and that's what I'm getting at, right, is when you take all that into account where you're talking about everyday life for you, where you're working, they're working, now multiply that between four people.
Yeah. Right? Oh, 100%.
Yeah, it's hard.
It is. No, it 100% is, and that's where, like, I would like to, and that's, I'm hoping, so obviously also, you know, convention stuff was convention stuff at Warfare Weekend.
Yes.
But my hope is to try and push some of those definitely to Adepticon. At least if the problem with Adepticon too is like when rooms close and what tables you can get access to, it's not as easy to play like Warfare.
Yeah.
For some of the stuff. But I got to check with my brother and see exactly what our plan is for Sunday. Mm-hmm. And I might try and run some stuff Sunday, at least try and get a couple of the multiplayer things, because we should have a pretty good turnout, I'm expecting, based on, you know, just historically what we had last year, plus right. the number of people that show up to Adepticon, plus like we've got a lot more players that have popped up on the Discord. So I might try and do that on Sunday. I might talk with Simon and see. I don't think we would do something that is like you have to buy a ticket for it, but we might unofficially
do beer something. And pretzels.
Yeah. Like let's do some 2v2 games or free for all. Let's try and stress test the rules a bit more too.
Yeah.
So we can clean some of that up, because there's PDFs out there, but I don't even think they're on the Hall of Eternal Champions.
I don't believe so.
To be honest, which also...
I believe they're just on the Discord.
Yeah, there's some draft stuff. Yeah, I see draft stuff. Passion. Yeah. So I don't even see that as an option. And actually, draft is another thing. It's like crap tons of fun. But yeah, I think the big thing for me would be the multiplayer stuff.
The multiplayer. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah, I mean, look, you know me well enough. We've talked about it well enough. While I do have my competitive bones in my body, and I love the competitive format. I mean, as I've said before, I don't even play threes as a competitive format myself.
Yeah,
I play it as a fun format to just enjoy and try some stuff. As we saw last year at Adepticon. Hey, Wonky, what should I play at threes? Torin. Okay. Well, yeah,
'cause of course I'm going to troll you with that one.
Yeah, you would. And you know what? I'm okay with it. It's still, I had a blast. I met some cool people with it.
Yeah.
It was super fun for me to do, right? But the thing that I honestly would actually like to see worked on and gotten back out to us and doing more is I would actually like to see narratives. Like, I really would like to see not just more story-based like material coming to us, but yeah. I would actually like to see narrative events.
Yeah, I think because I wouldn't hate to see those as well. I think that can be fun. I think the whole with the framework of like the gods and stuff, it makes it kind of easy to be a bit of that, you know, tribalism and mm-hmm. like this is my faction, you know.
Yes,
kind of like. You know, like you're like a Tomas player because you like all the undead, and like I'm a Gruul player usually. Like that's how I think of myself first and foremost. Even though, like, okay, obviously you can use the same models that I play in Gruul and Ista and do really well. Yeah,
but I mean, if you were gonna pick a god to represent correct. You would yeah, pick Gruul.
I would play Gruul, like 100%. I'll be yeah. playing Gruul. Which I was really close to bouncing back to. I went through like 4 warbands before I picked one for this league.
So
random aside,
I'm going to be honest with you. This league, my warband choice actually came from a discussion in the Warband Dojo channel from Rob.
Yeah, yeah. I was all over the place, but we'll talk about that more.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later.
We'll talk in league more, but yeah. So like, I think it's one of the good things about factions in games. I think is that I'm an X player, and like that. You know, I play this faction. I feel like I'm slightly a vested interest. I'm not granted other games. You can't play the same heroes in a different faction. Usually that's, you can't like magically be a Space Marine player and like, well, my Space Marines I'll play are Tyranids, right? Like that doesn't jive. So it's a little bit different in this game. But I think still has some of that like tribalism. And I think the narrative stuff would be really cool. Like I 100% could get behind you on narrative events.
Yeah. Well, and like the team events, besides just seeing even like, you know, because I did want to come back to this because I was just thinking about it, but
yeah,
even just besides seeing like the 2v2s, the multiplayer format and stuff like that, you know, even if you want to talk about it in a little bit more of a competitive way, I would not mind seeing a team format that is like the like Warhammer team formats, where it's okay, there's four players across this team, right? And nobody can be the same god. Nobody can share models.
Yeah, that's that would be fun. I would prefer it an odd number of players, yeah, but I get what you're going with.
Yep, yeah,
100%. Yeah, it would be. I actually played in a format like that in War Machine too. So it was called the America Team Championships, which is kind of like a lesser version of like the World Team Championships I talked about before. And we played that. I think it had that same rule. So like you couldn't play, you could play the same faction, but you couldn't play the same warcaster, which usually kind of derived how you built your army a bit.
Right.
And so you couldn't repeat warcasters across your team, which was kind of cool because it was that same kind of a, you're on a team, but you can't duplicate.
Yeah.
The options. I kind of like that. I actually wouldn't hate if you could duplicate the god, but you just couldn't duplicate the heroes. And I think that would naturally make you not duplicate a god.
Yeah. I think if you can't duplicate the heroes, you're probably not going to duplicate the god realistically, because I mean, you might play a great example, right? Tomas.
Yeah. Tomas, you definitely would not.
You might play Tomas again if you don't have Fazeal, but realistically, are you going to play Tomas without Fazeal? Probably not.
I think the only one I could maybe see would be Gruul. I think you could do some interesting stuff with like the defender. Have one get Gendrys, the other gets Lori Bella.
Right. Well, I mean,
and go that, and then Torin maybe too.
Krognar even.
Yeah, Krognar, I feel like would be a little bit hard to do. I mean, when you only have like 14 or so champions, and then you're taking all 14 of them, unless you're going out of God, it definitely does that.
I'm saying like with Krognar, he's another one that immediately I think Zarin's great in the list.
Yeah.
But you don't need him. If somebody else is like, hey, I need Zarin.
Yeah, cool, I guess my minimal amount of Krognar playing, I felt like I always wanted Zarin.
I'm running him. I'm running without him right now.
Yeah, that feels weird to me. but I do tend to be a little bit stubborn and stuck in my ways at times. So 100% does not surprise me. But yeah, I think that would be cool. And I think the thing that would help that the most is we need to get the fluff going again. I think it's really hard to do narrative events or care about narrative events if you don't have strong story behind it. And that's the thing I feel like, and that, okay, maybe that might just be my other general wish list item, is getting the fluff and story going again. The V1 fluff, while it didn't have an overarching story,
right,
that I can really, there was a couple of them I think that tied together a little bit, but most of them were just like almost like character intro stories.
Yeah.
I thought was fantastic, and it helped me care more about heroes I liked.
Yep.
And gave you some cool insight into them. And I know there's been talk that a lot of that's been archived and a lot of that will come up. Now, granted, the creature caster stuff is like there was some not insignificant changes, I think, they were going to make to the fluff just in general, it felt like. I mean, like the core was there, but I think there was definitely some very different like ideas. Directions I think they were going to go with it.
Yeah.
So I would really like to see the story. Like, I think the game's fantastic. I think the setting has been cool, but now the setting feels like it's in flux a bit because we don't really know the setting. And then it was always kind of weird because you had like futuristics, because it was the three timelines essentially. This is where heroes came from in V1, right? It was the like future timeline, which was like Sky and Alendir,
Nephany,
and then you had like the quote unquote World War timeline. So you know Barney, Lori Bella, I think that's where Kogan was.
Yeah.
And then you had like, you know, like your more like your typical fantasy timeline, and the fluff made sense.
Yep.
And we don't have that anymore. So like you look at, okay, here's a elf chick with a jetpack and laser swords next to, you know, a minotaur gladiator. Well, that feels a little bit weird.
Yep.
Unless, and granted, I think that core of like the gods summoning people, I think they're calling it Midian now versus, I don't, was it the In-Between or In-Between, the Between, yeah, or I think something?
They're calling it Midian now.
I thought it was called, yeah, which is fine.
Yeah.
But it's like, I feel like we need to get that, those story juices going a bit, and then the narrative stuff can take off.
Yeah.
And that would be fun, because there's some games that did it cool. I mean, do you, were you much of a card player, like card game player, Fabius?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you ever play Legend of the Five Rings?
So I did not ever play Legend of the Five Rings. It was one I looked at.
Yeah.
But I mean, I followed, like, I did all sorts of card games themselves, so I get the idea.
Yeah, because, like, Legend of the Five Rings was really cool, because it would do, like, big, like, tournaments, like, the highly competitive ones.
Yep.
And then they would, like, change the story based on what clan, so,
based Legend of the Five Rings. Based on the clan that
won. Correct, yeah, so Legend of the Five Rings, for those that don't know, is, like, a feudal Japan setting, but it's got, like, supernatural stuff as well. And yeah, so like it was a card game, and then you'd pick a clan that was named after a different animal, and they, you know, were all their different personalities. But then like the cards were always like named characters. So then in the fluff, things would happen based on what clans were like that did well at the tournament. So it wasn't like a narrative event. Like there wasn't special rules or things of that nature that I remember. It was just like, hey, this tournament season, Tomas just destroyed everybody.
Yep. I'll
just throw it out there. And then in the fluff, like, okay, Tomas is gaining power and he's, you know, doing whatever. So, like, that would be cool to see, even if they do it that from a competitive standpoint. But I'd love to see some actual, like, narrative stuff with, like, some special rules and whatnot.
Yep. I am 100% with you on that. So... Well, I don't know about you, Wonky, but I'm a little talked out on things that I can think of. Do you have any final things that you would really, really like to see for this upcoming year?
Yep. Two words.
Okay.
Pirate Minotaur.
Okay. Look. God damn it, I hate you for that, because that actually sounds really cool.
I had to.
I know.
I was holding it in my back pocket. Because I knew you were going to ask this kind of a question.
Yep.
And I had to go there.
It's okay. I mean, I have one more that I actually would really like to see as well.
All right. What do you got for me, Fabius? Is it going to be top Pirate Minotaur?
I don't think so, but I mean, that's neither here nor there. Undead Dwarf Defender.
Oh, I'm in. I'm in on that, too.
Dude, I have been looking at it, right? And I'm like, we have an undead human.
Mm-hmm.
We actually have two of those. We have, well, and Ramona's technically a vampire, I guess.
Yeah, but I thought she was more elfish.
Yeah, she's more elfish. So I take that. That's kind of where I'm at. Is like, we have two undead humans. We have an undead elf. We have an undead minotaur.
Mm-hmm.
Where's my damn undead dwarf?
I can get behind undead.
Give me my undead dwarf, damn it.
that could be pretty sweet.
And then, of course, if we've got an undead dwarf at that point, give me an undead orc.
Yeah, that could be cool too.
Right. So, but an
undead goblin, that could be kind of wild.
Oh yeah, that'd be so cool. Okay. we have now covered like the full range of. We're just looking forward to the new year.
yeah, pretty much. We want all the things.
Yes. So, Creaturecaster, if you listen to this, please. Give us all the things. but yeah, okay. So I like it. Pirate Minotaur and Undead Dwarf.
Yeah.
I think that's a good way to sum up the episode.
Yeah.
Wonky, you're over there going, no, it's not. No, it's really not.
Yeah, no, it's... No, I think that's pretty good stuff.
Yeah. So, well, guys, as always, you know, Wonky and I are always here doing these podcasts. We love doing them, so please keep listening to them. And as always, if there is a subject that you would like us to talk about, if there is a warband that you would like us to discuss, if there's a particular map now that you actually have put out or want to see us playtest, by all means, please throw it in the podcasts and streams, tag us with what you want, or obviously DM us on the Discord. But otherwise, guys, get out there, play those games, and Wonky, let's portal on out of here.